Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be diving into something called the digital divide. And, it's a pretty big deal, especially now when so much of our lives, happens online. It might even seem kind of ironic that we're talking about this on a platform that needs internet access to even, work, after all the folks who could really benefit from this information might not be able to hear it. But, that's exactly why we're here to shed some light on this issue and figure out what can be done about it.
Yeah, it really is like we're highlighting the problem just by the format that we're forced to use to get this information out. But I think that that also speaks to the power of these kinds of platforms. Those who can connect can learn about it. And hopefully that sparks some, action and change.
Exactly. So let's break it down. What exactly is the digital divide? Who is it that's being left behind?
So you can think of it as this gap, a gap between those who have easy access to the internet and all that it offers and those who just don't. And the numbers are pretty crazy. We were looking at a Forbes Advisor article, and they said that 42 million Americans, 42 million, still don't have broadband internet. To put that into perspective, that's more people than the entire population of Canada.
42 million. I knew it was an issue, but I didn't realize it was that widespread. So it's not just about, being able to watch the latest viral video or stream your favorite show. What are the real consequences for people on the wrong side of this divide?
Yeah, it goes way beyond entertainment. This lack of access has serious real-world consequences for a lot of people, especially people in rural areas and those who are struggling financially. Only about 60% of households that are making under $30,000 a year have broadband. And, broadband can be expensive. Yeah. So it's understandable why it wouldn't be, top of mind when you're just trying to, make ends meet.
Right. Makes total sense. Well, but I'm guessing that it's not just the cost to the internet service, right?
Definitely not. Cost is a big one. But there's also the issue of infrastructure. A lot of rural communities simply don't have the infrastructure that's required for reliable internet. We came across this story about a guy named Michael McMaster. He's a video producer. And he runs his business from his farm in rural California. And he struggled for years with slow internet. He would try to work from, coffee shops, libraries, anywhere he could find a decent connection. And he just recently got broadband for the first time ever.
It's mind-boggling to me that in this day and age, someone can be completely cut off from something that we just consider so basic. It really highlights that human impact of this issue. So we've established that millions of people are being left behind here. But how does this lack of access actually affect people's lives?
Well, let's start with education. For kids these days, they pretty much live online. Homework, research, everything. But when millions of students don't have reliable internet access at home, what happens? They fall into something called the homework gap. They can't do their assignments. They can't access the same resources that their classmates can. It's like they're starting a race miles behind everyone else.
Yeah, I've heard of that term, the homework gap. It really does sound like a massive disadvantage. Mm-hmm. How many kids are we even talking about here?
The statistics are pretty alarming. Almost 17 million school children in the U.S. lack internet access at home. And it's not just a problem for kids. Healthcare is another area where the internet is becoming so important. Telehealth appointments, accessing medical information, even scheduling appointments. So much of it relies on being online.
I can see how that would be a huge barrier, especially for people in those rural areas where healthcare is already pretty limited. It's like another layer of difficulty on top of an already difficult situation.
Exactly. And when you have unreliable internet access in healthcare, it can have some serious consequences beyond just inconvenience. It can disrupt patient care. It can create all these legal and compliance issues. It can even increase the risk of data breaches, which, of course, has huge financial and privacy implications.
It's a scary thought that, something like scheduling a doctor's appointment or refilling a prescription can become this big ordeal. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, right?
Right. We talked about education, we've talked about healthcare, but the digital divide also impacts people's ability to find and keep jobs. In today's job market, so much relies on being connected. Online job boards applications, professional networking, even remote work opportunities. It all requires access to the internet.
I can't even imagine trying to navigate the job market these days without the internet. It seems nearly impossible.
Yeah, it's definitely getting more and more difficult. Research shows that job seekers without broadband are 21% less likely to even use online job search resources. And it's not just about finding a job, it's about staying competitive once you have one. Think about, professional development online training. keeping up with all the industry news and trends. It all happens online these days.
So it's like a vicious cycle. Limited internet access leads to fewer job opportunities.
Yeah.
Which then makes it harder to afford broadband, which then further limits your opportunities.
Exactly. And it's not even just economic opportunity either. The digital divide also impacts a person's ability to participate in their community and the political process, what we would call civic engagement.
Okay. This is where it gets really interesting to me. So how does lack of internet access affect civic engagement? It's not like we're voting on lawn yet, at least in most places.
True. But the internet has become a crucial tool for accessing information. Information about candidates, about local issues, voting procedures. It's how people you know engage in these discussions and debates about important topics that are affecting their communities. So without internet access, you're basically cut off from these vital channels of civic participation.
So it's about having a voice,
being
informed, feeling connected to your community. It almost sounds like a recipe for feeling powerless and disconnected.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. When people don't have that access, it can lead to the feelings of apathy, disillusionment with the whole political process. They might be less likely to vote or even engage with their, you know, local representatives.
Yeah, and that's a real problem for democracy, right? If entire communities are being silenced. So they don't have access to the same information and platforms. I mean, this is just a recipe for disengagement and division.
You're absolutely right. And it can further marginalize these communities that are already struggling to be heard.
So we've covered a lot here. Education, healthcare, jobs, civic engagement. It seems like the digital divide touches every aspect of modern life. And, you know, as our world is becoming more and more digital, the consequences of being disconnected are only going to get worse. So the big question is, what are we doing about it? What are the biggest roadblocks to closing this gap? And are there any solutions in sight?
Well, one of the biggest hurdles, as we've already talked about, is the cost of broadband. For a lot of low-income families, it's just not affordable. And even if they can manage that monthly fee, there's often the added cost of devices installation and a bunch of other hidden expenses.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah.
You know, how do you prioritize internet access when you're struggling to just keep a roof over your head and put food on the table?
Exactly. And then even when cost isn't an issue, there's still that issue of infrastructure, especially in those rural areas we were talking about, you know, laying down fiber optic cables or building cell towers. It's incredibly expensive, especially in these sparsely populated regions. It requires a massive investment from both the public and the private sectors.
Right. It sounds like this massive logistical challenge, not to mention a financial one. But surely there are programs and initiatives out there that are trying to address this. What's being done to help bridge the digital divide?
Well, there are definitely efforts underway, both from the government and from the private sector. Let's start with a few government programs. There's something called the Affordable Connectivity Program, or the ACP, and it offers a monthly discount on internet service for eligible households. So it's a good start. But it's important to mention that the future of the program is uncertain because Congress hasn't given it future funding.
So it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
But maybe not a permanent solution.
Yeah.
What else?
There's the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, or the BEAD program. This one's much bigger. Billions of dollars to expand high-speed internet across the country. It's a huge undertaking. But full rollout of this program isn't expected until 2026.
Wow, 2026. That seems so far away, especially considering how urgent this problem is. It really highlights the complexity of these infrastructure projects.
It does. And it's not just about building the new infrastructure. It's also making sure people can afford to use it. In addition to the ACP, there was the Emergency Connectivity Fund. This helped schools and libraries provide devices and internet access to students and staff during the pandemic. But that program has expired.
Another temporary fix to a larger ongoing issue.
Unfortunately, yes. Now on the private sector side, there are companies like Comcast stepping up with their own initiatives.
I've heard of Comcast's Internet Essentials program.
Yeah.
How effective has that been in connecting people?
Well, it's been pretty successful in connecting millions of low-income Americans to the internet. They offer discounted internet service. They even have options to purchase low-cost computers, which is a huge help for families that can't afford those devices.
That's great. It sounds like a really valuable resource. But it's probably not a perfect solution, is it?
You're right. Programs like this are a great start, but some would say they don't go far enough. There's still a lot of work to be done to address these underlying issues of affordability and infrastructure in a truly comprehensive way.
Yeah, it sounds like this multifaceted problem. That needs a multifaceted solution. It's not going to be solved with just one program or one initiative. So what else is being done to address this gap? especially at the community level.
Well, one promising approach is the rise of community-owned and operated broadband networks. We're seeing this in towns and cities across the country, where local governments and residents are getting together to build their own internet infrastructure.
So they're taking matters into their own hands. That's really inspiring. But I imagine that's a massive undertaking. Where do they even begin?
It definitely requires a serious investment. Time, money, resources. It's not easy. But the potential benefits are enormous. Community-owned networks can often offer more affordable internet service, better customer service, and they're more responsive to the needs of that particular community. They're built by the community, for the community.
That's such a great example of how empowering communities can lead to these really innovative solutions. What are some other promising approaches that you're seeing out there?
Another interesting trend is using mobile devices to kind of bridge this gap. In a lot of places where, you know, traditional broadband is limited, smartphones are becoming the primary way that people are accessing the internet.
That's amazing to me how much access a simple smartphone can provide. But there are limitations there too, right? Smaller screens, data caps. And just the learning curve of using a smartphone can be a barrier for some people.
You're right. It's not a perfect solution, but it's a step in the right direction. And it's kind of forcing developers to think differently and to create more mobile-friendly resources for education, for healthcare, job training, all kinds of things.
So it's about adapting to the reality on the ground and finding these creative ways to use the technology that we have to connect people.
Exactly. And it's also realizing that closing the digital divide isn't just about providing access. It's about creating a culture of digital inclusion.
What do you mean by digital inclusion?
It means ensuring that everyone feels welcome and empowered to participate in the digital world, no matter their age, their income, their background, or their, you know, technical skills. It's about building these online spaces that are accessible, safe, and relevant to everyone.
That makes a lot of sense. It's not enough to just hand someone a smartphone or give them a discounted internet connection. They need to feel like they belong in that space and that they have the skills and the support to navigate it successfully.
Exactly. It's about making the internet truly a democratic space where everyone has an equal opportunity to connect, to learn, and to contribute.
Well, this has been incredibly eye-opening. We've covered so much from defining the digital divide to, you know, exploring these real-world consequences to even examining some of the initiatives working to address this issue. But I know that there's still so much more to unpack here. What other aspects of the digital divide should our listeners be aware of?
Well, one really crucial aspect that we haven't touched on yet are the ethical considerations surrounding the digital divide. It's not just about access. It's about what that access means for individuals and for society as a whole.
That's a great point. It's not just about the technology itself. It's about the impact that technology has on people's lives and on our community.
Exactly. And as our world becomes more and more digital, it raises these really important ethical questions that we need to grapple with.
So what are some of those ethical considerations? What should we be thinking about as we try to close this digital divide?
Responsibly and ethically. That's a great question. And it's one that we're going to dive into a little bit more after a quick break. Stay tuned.